Good morning. Thank you for joining us here at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida for the L-1 countdown status briefing for Space Shuttle Atlantis' final mission, STS-135, to the International Space Station. Joining me today is Jeff Spaulding, NASA Test Director.
Good morning.
Joe DeLay, STS-135 Payload Manager.
Good morning.
And Kathy Winters, Shuttle Weather Officer.
Good morning.
We'll hear from our panelists and then take questions. Jeff.
All right, thank you, Kandria, and good morning to everyone. I'm extremely proud to be here this morning, which may very likely be our last shuttle launch countdown status briefing, but I am here to represent the entire shuttle team for the upcoming launch of the Space Shuttle Atlantis on Friday, tomorrow. Our last couple of days out at the launch pad have gone extremely well, and we've gotten a lot of work done, and we're proceeding on the timeline as we had hoped and are working towards tomorrow's launch. Did have a couple of minor items last night, and I'll give you a little more on that as we go through here. We did finish our fuel cell reactant loading yesterday on time as planned and got through that, and we do have our 3 days of planned hold time for our liquid hydrogen, and we are at 9 days for the liquid oxygen now, so we did pick up an extra day there with a good load. We also finished our main engine final preps and checkouts, and those all went very well yesterday as well. And we're just completing up all of our final inspections on the external tank and our solid rocket boosters as we make sure that those are configured and ready for flight. All of those things have gone well, as I mentioned. We did just finish up the checkout of our orbiter and ground comm communications networks, and that job was completed satisfactorily as well. Last night we did have an inadvertent fire alarm on our pad, which is just a very minor thing, but it did clear us off for just a little bit while we did an assessment and then let folks get back in. And since that time, we did change out that faulty fire alarm. As it turned out, it was a false alarm, as expected. But we changed out that faulty fire alarm on our 115-foot level of the fixed service structure, and that system's back up and functioning normally. We did also change out a few of our Tyvek covers on the forward reaction control system. The RTV, or room temperature vulcanized rubber, that we use as an adhesive for those. We also put a coupon on this that we have, didn't do a test on, to make sure that the bond set up appropriately. And that bond really wasn't up to our liking, so we decided to change out some of the covers up on the forward reaction control system. And we have completed that, and all the Tyvek covers that are up there now are in shape and ready for launch. The other thing that happened last night is we did have our pad chillers, which provide chilled water to some of our ground systems as well, provide orbital ground cooling, were acting up on us a little bit. So we did lose a couple of those and had to swap in some others, and there was a brief period of time where all three of the pad chillers, which we have triple redundancy on, were down for a period where we were using our potable water system to provide cooling, which is our fourth backup. But we do have two of those chillers back online, and there's one that's faulty, and we're looking at that today to figure out what, if anything, we need to do with that particular chiller. But we only need one chiller for launch, and we do have redundancy still available to us with the two up and functioning and providing plenty of cooling to all of our vehicle and ground systems at the pad currently. Let's see, some of the launch countdown events that will be coming up throughout the day and into tomorrow. We do have our final flight crew equipment stow in a crew module starting in about an hour this morning. That's going to be a fairly energetic one this time. We have quite a bit of extra things that we'll be putting on the vehicle. Not extra things, but certainly quite a few things planned for this particular launch. We do have remaining launch preps to get into our rotating service structure retract this afternoon, and we'll of course be watching the weather on that. As we're all aware, there is some weather coming in today, and we'll be watching that for launch day as well. We'll be powering up our onboard fuel cells tonight at about 8 o'clock, and that'll be providing some of our onboard power once we get into orbit. And we'll continue configuring our ground flight systems throughout the day until we start our initial pad clears at about 9 o'clock tonight. We do get into our earliest external tank load at 2 o'clock in the morning, just after 2. And that's about a 3-hour operation, at which time we send our ground crews out to the pad, which include our final inspection team, to take one final look at the tank and the vehicle, make sure everything's ready for launch. And we also send out our closeout crew into the crew module, make sure the crew module is ready for the flight crew to come out. And the flight crew is scheduled to come out just after 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And we'll get them out at the pad and get everything in shape and ready to go. And looking for our on-time launch on Friday. Window open time is 11:21, and we generally target the middle of that 10-minute window, which is about 11:26, and there'll be some seconds associated with that. We update all those final times on launch day once we understand all of the winds and our day launch parameters, so we'll be ready to go for that as well. As far as launch availability goes, we currently, as we've been reporting, have the 8th, 9th, and 10th available to us. The Delta starts to come onto the range on the 11th. We've talked to them a little bit, but certainly no real negotiations will happen unless we get into a scrub scenario, and then we'll start looking to see if we can potentially get that 11th as a potential launch date as well. So in general, we'll pick the best two attempts in those particular time frames, or possibly three if we were to get the 11th, but we would have to see how that scrub scenario works out, because as we'd also reported, if we get into a scenario where we scrub very late in the count in order to provide a crew rest, we would probably most likely go to a 48-hour scrub scenario. That line in the sand, if you will, it's not a fixed line, but it's a line that we would look at as at L minus 4 hours. And if we scrub after that time frame, and all things being equal from a technical rationale perspective, then we may elect to go 48 hours to give our teams a chance to get back, get home and get back to work. With the amount of people that we are expecting, upwards of 500,000 to 750,000 folks in the general area, getting home is going to be very challenging for even the folks who live very close to work. So we want to make sure that we can give our teams rest as required. It's a 12-day mission, zero contingency days and two weather days. We're hopeful to get a 13th day, and right now with the load that we did get on our PRSD system, we're close to that, and we can think we can manage the rest of that on orbit if we are able to launch on our first attempt. After that, it becomes quite a bit more challenging to be able to have enough commodity on board to be able to get that 13th day if we don't go right at the first day. End of missions plan in KSC on the 20th, 6:57 is our current landing time on that date. If we need the 21st, 6 a.m. in the morning would be our next opportunity here at KSC. So let's see, our teams here and really all around the world have been working extremely hard for quite a while on this particular mission to get everything ready and make sure that the vehicle and the payload are ready for hopefully a magnificent launch on Friday. There's an old saying that says it's better to travel well than to arrive. And yeah, I'd have to say after the last 30 years, certainly our program and these shuttles throughout all of their missions have traveled very well. And after 135's landing, I think we can say at that point that we've arrived. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Joe.
Thank you. Okay, good morning. My name is Joseph Delai, and I am the NASA KSC Mission Payload Manager. And I'd like to spend just a few minutes talking about the payloads we have on ULF-7. So if we can get the first slide. Okay, so one of the objectives of the mission is to resupply the station with cargo, supplies, and science in order to keep station on track for another year. So we're going to bring up about 8,200 pounds of supplies, and to date, that's the largest volume-wise that we have done. So the module, as you can see from the picture, which has a majority of the cargo weight, is 25,359 pounds. We also have an external carrier, which will bring up a satellite refueling experiment, and then we'll bring back a failed pump module. I'll talk about that in a second. And on the other side of the orbiter, we'll be carrying up a DoD PicoSat satellite called PSSC, and we'll get into that in a second. Okay, here we kind of have a cartoon picture of the 16 racks that are inside a module that are being used to carry up the ISS supplies. One thing that we did at KSC is the program challenged us to modify the racks to allow more carrying capability by about 250 pounds. At the same time, they challenged us to keep the hatch open as late as possible and try to go to the pad as late as we can in order to accommodate getting all the supplies here on time from various PIs and various customers really around the world. So one thing that we did was we modified the racks. That was very successful, and we did keep the hatch open and went to the pad as late as we could. And this was a first time operation at KSC, and it was very successful. This is a beautiful picture. And this was taken before we installed the aft end cone. And you can see the racks in there and the 8,200 pounds of ISS supplies. And that was taken in the SSPF. Okay, this picture, as I mentioned earlier, we're bringing up a first of its kind robotic refueling mission called RRM. I know you guys had a fantastic demonstration yesterday, and we also have some folks here from the RRM team, so we have some real deep technical questions, we can do that after the briefing. But this is going to be located on the aft side of the external carrier, as you can see from the top right picture. And on that picture, you also see what is called the pump module adapter plate. And the pump module ORU, which is part of the cooling system on orbit, we'll be bringing that back to do some research and figure out why it failed. And that'll be mounted to the other side of the external carrier. So if you remember, that pump failed. It was part of the S1 cooling system. It failed back in July of 2010. We do have three other spares up there, but we're not quite sure what's going on, so we need to get this back, take a look at it, and some lessons learned, and so we don't, if it happens again, we know what to do on orbit with the other three pumps. So as a summary, just for this page, the mission's currently 12 days, as Jeff mentioned. Flight day 3, the orbiter will dock, and flight day 4, the MPLM, the module, will be attached to Node 2. And on flight day 5, the robotic refueling mission will be attached to ISS, and the pump module will be returned and attached to the LMC, the external carrier. And then on flight day 12, we'll go ahead and deploy the PicoSat satellite. Okay, here's a picture. I think you guys saw Rosie that's out in the press site. So this is the actual flight unit is flying in the payload bay. And in preparation, so basically RRM is in preparations for future refueling and repair of on-orbit spacecraft. The RRM will perform what we call representative tasks like locate valves, turn valves, simulate transferring the fuel. And these tasks will require telerobotically refuel a spacecraft via its ground propellant fill and drain valve, in addition to other servicing tasks. So that's why at the beginning I said it was the first of its kind, and it really is very unique. So if you haven't had a chance to see it out in the press site, you might want to get there after. This demonstration on orbit will use the ISS SPDM robotic arm to locate and perform the tasks that I just mentioned. Okay, this is a picture of the adapter plate that's on the external carrier, and the PM will be brought back on top of this. Here's a picture. This is an actual ground picture of the S1 pump module that we'll be returning. So this was a ground picture before it flew, and this is what it looks like. This is a great picture of the external carrier going to the canister, which will bring the payloads to the pad. Okay, the PicoSat Solar Cell 2, this is a great picture of the Department of Defense PSSC. And as I mentioned earlier, it will be deployed from the orbiter via a spring-loaded box. And basically, its main objective is to perform tracking demonstrations in orbit. Well, I don't know what to say about this. This is just beautiful. I can't find words for it. It's just the payloads in the orbiter before we close the doors. It's fascinating. As Jeff mentioned, you know, you work here for almost 30 years. I never take this for granted. Never take it for granted. So, okay, next page. So let me. I kind of gave you an overview of the payloads itself, the supplies and the cargo that were flying in the MPLM, and I talked about the external payloads that were flying on our external carrier and the PicoSat. So let me just spend a few minutes talking about our mid decks.
No, I'm very serious. We're trying to get the information that we need here. We got all of this in our press kit. We're running out of time. I hate to say this to you.
Jay, please don't interrupt. Joe. Okay, we'll let the briefing continue, please, and we'll take questions as soon as the participants have finished their presentations.
Okay, I'll continue. Thank you. So I'm just going to spend a couple minutes talking about, we have a lot of middecks going up this flight. We have 6 powered, and we have 4 passive, and this is the first time that we're going to be loading so many middecks. So I'll just spend a couple minutes going through some of the main ones. Next page, please. Okay, so one of them is called the RSV, the recumbent attenuated salmonella vaccine, and this is an investigation to evaluate specific strains of salmonella that have been modified to serve as potential vaccines. So they'll actually fly the vaccine on orbit, do some modifications, bring it back to Earth and turn over the PIs, and we're close to some groundbreaking news here, so this is a good one. The Glacier, we've flown this before. This is a cryogenic freezer refrigerator designed to provide transportation and preservation capability for samples requiring thermal control. Next page, please. Micro 2A is a commercial payload that investigates the ability of biofilms to survive and propagate on various substrate materials and microgravity. So the objective is really to further our understanding of both materials and mitigation techniques, which will preclude and reduce the buildup of biofilms in water systems and air handlers here on Earth. And then the one below that, the Brick Synergy, that is actually a KSC payload. And it's just, again, it's going to be more research about growing plants in space and long-term space flights. Next page, please. And we have the Cube Lab 7 and 8. And this is really, it's a commercial company called NanoRack Cube Lab. It's really a low-cost educational platform to fly various projects on the ISS. These particular projects will be flying liquids for crystal growth, which of course talks about protein crystals for pharmaceutical research. And then we'll be mixing two or three different fluids at precise times. And the last one on that page is another KSC, and you had a demonstration on this yesterday, the Ford osmosis bag. And basically this will aid in the design of untreated water into potable water. So again, some applications for long-term space flight and here on Earth. And lastly, I wanted to mention this. This is kind of unique. This is, you guys have been hearing about the smartphone that's going to be flying on this mission. It's actually two of them. So the Space Lab app will make its way to the ISS via smartphone on STS-135. And it's going to remain there for several months for the ISS crew to conduct a series of experiments. Odyssey has also announced it is bringing the astronauts' on-orbit experimental tasks down to what we call Earth for terrestrial consumers to enjoy via the Space Lab app. So in layman's terms, in the future, you'll be able to follow certain activities on orbit that the astronauts are doing. So I thank you for your time and hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you, Joe. Kathy?
Thanks, Kendra. Well, weather is not looking good for launch. As you know, we've been talking about this for a few days now. And as you can see outside, the clouds have rolled in. We're starting to see some showers. We even had a thunderstorm show up this morning along Cocoa Beach. So we are expecting more of this for the next couple of days. Today, our big challenge will be getting through the RSS retract operations. We already are looking at the weather for that. And what we'll do is we'll just work it real time and be talking to the NASA test director as they're managing the operation and find a window of opportunity to get the RSS retracted. For launch, our main concern is still having showers and thunderstorms in the area. So with that, we do have a 70% chance of KSC weather prohibiting launch. Looking at our satellite picture, you can see that we do have that tropical wave and that large trough, and it basically extends from the southeast Gulf of Mexico all the way across into off of our coast, and that's moving into the area today. We've already seen the wind shift around this morning there from the northwest. So it'll be coming around to the northeast and then around to the southeast as that rolls through, and by launch time tomorrow will be from the south-southwest. As that rolls through, it's just bringing a lot of cloud cover, a lot of showers, and even some isolated thunderstorms. Mostly with these waves, we get a lot of shower activity, not as much lightning, but there usually is some, and so we'll be watching for that as well. We do not expect severe weather, which would be winds greater than 50 knots or hail. We don't expect any of that with this. It's just our typical tropical stuff that we get here. We don't get it every day like this, but we do get it in waves, sort of, if you will, as these tropical waves come through during the summertime. Let's go ahead and look at the tanking forecast. For tanking tonight, we think things will quiet down when it comes to lightning, but I do expect that we'll see some showers in the area this evening. So right now we are expecting some cloud cover in the area, showers in the area, real light winds from the south-southwest, just 5 knots. Our main concern for tanking will be lightning within 5 nautical miles, and we do have a 20% chance of KSC weather prohibiting tanking. For our launch forecast, again, we're still expecting showers and thunderstorms in the area. The constraint's a little broader for RTLS. It's a 20 nautical mile condition. We can't have any showers or thunderstorms for the RTLS landing weather, abort landing weather. And so due to that concern and also cumulus clouds developing within 10 nautical miles of the launch pad, that's a lightning launch commit criteria, and also a flight through precipitation criteria that shuttle has specifically. Due to those concerns, we have a 70% chance of KSC weather prohibiting launch. For SRB recovery, the weather overall is pretty good. Mainly, we get concerned about seas in that area, and seas are just 3 to 4 feet and actually be decreasing the following couple of days. They are going to be experiencing probably some of this shower and thunderstorm activity, and what they usually do out there is they just work around that kind of weather and just wait it out. So right now, everything looks workable for SRB recovery. Space Flight Meteorology Group is forecasting good weather in the abort landing sites. No concerns there. And for the abort landing sites overseas, they're also forecasting all three sites to be go. So weather's looking good for the overseas abort landing sites. If we do happen to delay 24 hours, we still are going to continue to have moisture for the following couple of days, but we don't have as much dynamics with that wave. A lot of that will move up to the north. We'll still be very moist, though, so our primary concern will be cumulus clouds and showers developing as a sea breeze forms, which will be a little bit, just about a half hour to an hour before launch time. So with that, we have a 60% chance of KSC weather prohibiting launch. Space Flight Meteorology Group's forecasting good weather again at the abort landing sites on day two. And for the TAL sites, also good weather at all three sites. If we happen to delay 48 hours, the weather, again, we just continue to see the launch time is a little bit earlier. We'll still have a lot of moisture, but with that earlier launch time, there'll be less chance of a violation because we won't have as much development along the sea breeze just yet. So with that, we have a 40% chance of KSC weather prohibiting launch. For the abort landing sites, Space Flight Meteorology Group, again, forecasting good weather there. For the overseas sites, though, it does change a bit on day three. Zaragoza does have a chance for thunderstorms within 20 nautical miles, and Istres also has a slight chance for thunderstorms within 20 nautical miles, but we do have a good site at Marone. So I wish I had better weather for you, but we do have a 70% chance of KSC weather prohibiting launch due to the showers and thunderstorms that we expect in the area tomorrow. Kendra?
Thank you. We'll now take questions. I'd like to ask everyone to limit themselves to one question. At the end, if we have extra time, we'll come back around for follow-ups. When the microphone comes your way, please state your name, affiliation, and to whom you're addressing your question. Let's start over here with Jim.
Jim Siegel, Celebration Independent Newspaper. I think this might be a question for you, Jeff, but what would be the window for the RSS rollback? Is there a window, a time after which this will postpone the launch for a day or more?
It's not as easy to answer as you'd like to think, but what we would normally do is if we get into a posture where we can't retract it at our scheduled time, we're actually looking to try to do it a little bit early if we can get there with the work. It's always a challenge because the amount of work at this particular time frame is amazing, the amount of work that we have going on simultaneously at the pad. But we generally can do it 4 or so hours later. And we've shown that we can get about that time frame if we're able to resequence the work after the RSS and still try to get to a tanking on time. And that says that we are making decisions earlier than that time frame to pull some of that work in and use those people that are available, and that the weather that we may have that's holding up the RSS doesn't also constrain that other work. So you kind of are on a double-edged sword there. You got to be, you may not be able to get there even if you're trying to pull in some of that other work. So, in general, that's about where you're at with that. There is still a little bit more flexibility if you're willing to accept some delays to that tanking time frame, but that's a different decision process to do that. But generally, around 4 hours is what we use as our standard.
Marcia.
Marcia Dunn, Associated Press. Joe, I know you've got some commemorative things going up payload-wise. Could you talk about all the special things to mark the last shuttle flight?
That's a good question. Some of the items that I saw that are going up, we have, they have patches from all the previous flights that are going up, pins, educational bookmarks, and I think we can probably work through PAO. Somehow those are going to get back to PAO, and I know the bookmarks are going to be distributed to various schools throughout the country. And as far as the patches and pins, I can find out. But so between the patches, the pins, and the bookmarks, that's what I'm aware of that's going up. The ones that I saw are actually in the MPLM in a small little bag. I can't quite tell you how many, but I saw a good amount of bookmarks for kids. I do know that once they fly and they come back, they'll go to various schools. So kids will enjoy that.
Dan.
Yeah, Dan Billow from Channel 2. Jeff, are you firmly ruling out an attempt on all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if it comes to that?
Well, we would get ready to go on all three of those days if possible. Certainly our scrub scenarios dictate what we can and can't do. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we do have that kind of L-4 line in the sand that says if we go later than that, if we make an attempt and scrub after that time frame, we're kind of driving ourselves to a 48-hour scrub. So that would take that your ability to do three in a row. If you were to scrub before tanking, for example, certainly you could come in each day and look at the weather and do those type of things a lot more easily. But we still have that kind of line in the sand that says if you're going to make an attempt and you go past that time frame, your ability to hit every day you don't have that capability.
So if you find yourself having scrubbed both Friday and Saturday for whatever reason and there's no mechanical troubles, you wouldn't go for Sunday?
It sort of depends on our guidelines. If we're able to come back and get the team back here during that time frame, it depends on when we scrub, the nature of the scrub, technically whether we're able to do that. All of our days are available to us as we briefed, and it really just depends on what scenario we end up finding ourselves in and what our capabilities are.
Okay. Again, I'll remind everyone one question for the first time around. We'll come over here in the front row, please.
Hi, Simpson, Space Flight Magazine. Question for Jeff. The coolers that you lost last night, isn't it unusual for all three to go down at once? And could you just explain what they do?
It's a little unusual. Sometimes we do have, and these were, as it turned out, it looks as though they were all unrelated as to why they went down, different things. One, we think we may have a pump motor, which is the most serious, the one that is not back in service at this time. But they're out there currently actually troubleshooting that. They were troubleshooting that as of this morning. The other two, though, have come up without incident. We're looking at those also to make sure we understand why, when one went down, the other. It's not unusual for a chiller to go offline for some period of time, which is why you have other ones up and running, and you swap over to them for various. There's a lot of different reasons where that might happen. And the systems are designed fail-safe to do that if they detect something that the system isn't liking at that time. But it is unusual for all three of them to go down. But it's another reason why we have more capability than just those chillers available to us. We can also use the potable water system, which is what we did, and that provides adequate cooling for the vehicle to continue processing, which is what we were doing as well. Some of our other ground systems rely on that cooling, which was the thing that was giving us a little bit more consternation, which is why we wanted to get those chillers back up. But like I said, they're all back up. Two of the three are back up, providing nominal cooling at this point.
All right. Here, please.
Stephen Young with spaceflightnow.com, probably for Jeff and Kathy. When is the earliest that you could roll the RSS? And could you sort of quantify how serious a threat the weather is to RSS retraction today?
I'll answer the first part, and then I'll let Kathy answer the second with the weather. Right now, from our work perspective, as when I left this morning, maybe about an hour or so earlier than where we were targeting, we could maybe get to, and that's what we were hopeful for, again, depending on how the rest of the work lays out. And I'll let Kathy answer the weather part.
Right. We forecast for that. It takes 1 hour to roll back the RSS. We try to have lightning, no more than a 20% chance of lightning within 5 nautical miles during that time. The other constraints, the wind constraint is very high. It's like 40 knots sustained wind, so we're not worried about that. We're mainly concerned about lightning within 5. And we usually provide that forecast about a half hour before the roll, but we talk to them all the way up to when they start, and then we watch the weather all the way through the operation.
Okay. Next time, please.
Leo Enright from Irish Television. Just following up on Stephen, just to be a bit clearer about this. For instance, could you launch or could you roll back now as it currently stands?
The work right now doesn't allow us to do that because...
Sorry. I'm not looking at the weather right now. I'm sorry. But when I was looking at it this morning, it looked like there were some breaks. And so there's probably, it was trending down. We had a thunderstorm in the area moving through. And we had a shower. Probably wouldn't have been comfortable right at that time. But we're looking at that 1 o'clock, noon to 1 o'clock time period that they're trying to shoot for now. And so what we'll do is we'll watch the trends up to that point. And we have someone doing that right now. Clay Flynn actually is watching the weather for the RSS retract. He's our Atlas launch weather officer. So he's working with the NASA test director. So I'm sorry I can't give you a solid answer because I'm not there, but it really is very dynamic in that we'll call it kind of close, and that's when we can bring the probabilities down in this situation. If you get too far out in this situation, you just can't bring it down to that 20%. But as you get closer and you see how the dynamics are working out in the atmosphere and what's going on around the area, we watch for low-level convergence. We're watching all of the instrumentation we have to see if it looks like a good time to roll. So I'm not sure right now what's happening, but it is that close of a, you know, we make that call that close.
Irene Klotz with Reuters. For Joe, did you have any last requests from station program to fly anything? And sorry if you've already covered that. And for both of you, either one of you want to take a guess of how many years it'll be before there's another launch at 39A or B?
Well, I can talk to payload. the first one. let me address that. So you want to know if there's any last-minute requests. Compared to other flights, this mission wasn't too bad. Because we were able to work with the customers early enough in the program and got the word out, and were able to make these modifications and keep the hatch open as late as possible, it wasn't so bad as what I've seen in the past. There were a couple spare parts that came in that we're going to fly in mid-deck items that I guess you can call last minute in order to support some of the ECLS racks they have up there. But we purposely moved a lot of items back to the MPLM to keep this area of the spaces open in the mid-decks in case something came up at the last minute. So there were some ECLS rack spares, and that's probably about it, and it wasn't really too bad. As far as the second half of the question, I don't know about that one.
Well, in all honesty, we don't know. You know, there's a lot of things in work, and I know that's our managers have been talking about that for a significant period of time, that there's a lot of things in the works. There's a lot of plans that are out there for a lot of different types of either customers or some of the vehicles that we're looking at trying to do. And there'll be test flights, and there'll be other things associated with them. Some may be from Kennedy Space Center, either Complex 39A or B. Some may be from some of the other areas nearby or adjacent to us. So I don't really have a good guess. I'm not in all of those teams to give you a better feel for how that is. But certainly I know there's folks within NASA that can tell you some of them, maybe give you some better feel for when that might be.
From the Orlando Sentinel for Kathy. Yesterday, Mike Moses was talking about how he almost preferred weather systems like this, I guess, to some alternatives that could happen because of the prospect that windows could open up here and there that could allow for a launch. Could you talk a little bit about the prospect of those windows opening up, for example, and weather we're experiencing now?
Right. You know, sometimes you get little breaks in the weather. And the reason why this situation isn't quite as troublesome as others is we're not expecting any severe weather that could damage the vehicle as it's being exposed to the weather. We're mainly just looking for showers and thunderstorms. The vehicle's well protected with the lightning protection system. So our primary concern on other cases, on other more typical afternoon thunderstorm days that we get kind of daily, is in certain situations we get worried about more about severe weather. Particularly late in the spring, we get more worried about hail. So we can expose the vehicle in this case, and we don't have to worry about the fact that the vehicle is going to be damaged by the weather. We just have to be worried about being able to launch the vehicle around the weather, if you will, and so hoping for one of those gaps in the weather during that launch window.
Tarek.
Thank you. Tarek Malik with Space.com for Joe. Joe, just a quick question. There seem to be a few biological payloads on board. Just wondering if there's anything that you'd have to change out given a 1 or 2 day scrub. And if your team has snuck any goodies aboard for the last shuttle crew to maybe find while they're in space. Thanks.
Good question. As far as the MPLM, there is no what we call shelf life items. There's no constraints. So we could go, you know, probably 2 or 3 months, and we wouldn't have to worry about anything inside the MPLM. The mid-deck itself would have a few items that we'd have to change, but we could probably go a few weeks there. But it's really not a concern. As far as goodies, I wasn't able to get anything on this flight.
Here, please.
Donna Linewand with USA Today. Joe, describing the picture of the payload, you sort of sounded like a man in love. And so can you describe for us your last look at this last payload?
Yeah, that one picture that I showed you of the module with the before we put the aft end cone on, and you could see inside the racks and all the supplies. You know, it's sometimes I talk to people, it's like, you know, this isn't a piece, it's not a piece of metal. This is it's a way of life. It's what we do. You know, we work countless hours down here to prepare these modules and these payloads for flight. Everything we do has a consequence to it, you know, and safety is number one. And something as simple as making sure this belt's not is tight or a certain torque's applied, it all goes back to crew safety and making sure that we're successful on orbit. Because we realize everything we do now, I mean, we're just inches into what we know. And everything we do now is what I consider the foundation for human spaceflight. So every little thing that we take for granted, we don't take for granted. And it's a way of life for us. And yeah, it's emotional, but it's also part of history. And I think that's what you're seeing from a lot of the folks down here. It's a good question. Thank you.
Bill.
Bill Horowitz, CBS for Jeff. Just looking at launch options, given the forecast and where we stand at this moment, none of us are going to quote you anyway, right? So, but seriously, I mean, given the Saturday prospect, I mean, from the expectation, but you guys are going to gas this thing up and go for it Friday, and then if you don't make it, probably slip to Sunday. I mean, putting some probabilities and caveats in there, isn't that what it looks like right now?
Well, and Bill, I think you know, our goal going into the meeting tonight is always to try to tank. I mean, that is always our goal. Our goal is to do what we can to get to that launch attempt. And then we're going to weigh all the risks and evaluate where we are and look at the forecast and look at the trends and all the things that Mike Moses said yesterday to see what our confidence level is of making that attempt. We certainly don't want to get into a posture where we don't have any attempt. But I think we understand enough today to say, you know, this many hours out, you know, we're a day ahead of where we need to be tomorrow, that there's some opportunity there. And so when we have opportunity, I think generally we're going to take it. And that's what we want to do, because we want to, you know, it's a really tough day if you make a decision not to go and it turns out to be good weather. And we've seen those kind of things happen in the past. Or you're constrained for other reasons. So you want to make sure that you set yourself into a posture where you think you have a reasonable chance to get off the ground. And I think that we'll do that. But we're going to take a look at everything we can tonight, and I know Kathy's going to work as hard as she can to give us the best forecast and the best data, and we're going to continually update that if, in fact, we elect to go ahead and tank tonight. But from my perspective, you know, I am expecting, until somebody says we're not, that we're going to go ahead and tank tonight.
Over here, please.
Hi, Ken Kramer from Space Flight Magazine. For Joe, please, can you tell us, you held the MPLM open to the last moment. What was the last item or two that you put on the MPLM, and what are the last items for the mid-deck? Thank you.
Okay, Ken, good question. The last couple items that we stowed in the MPLM were the bottom portion of the aft end cone bags. If you remember the cartoon, it was the aft end cone bags. If you remember the cartoon picture, you saw the racks, and then on towards the end of the module, the circular part, we had bags around there. The last four we installed was actually critical treadmill hardware to resupply some of the treadmills up there. And then as far as the mid-deck, like I, of course, all that's not done yet, so we haven't completely filled it up yet. So, right. Oh, you want to know what the items are going to be? I think the last two items that are going on the mid-deck, again, are the ECLS spares, ECLS rack spares.
Okay.
Thank you.
Come over here, please.
I'm Mark Dakotas of Florida Today for Kathy. We've heard several times that you're saying we might get a break that would allow you to go. What kind of break, or what would the duration of that break need to be for you to be able to go?
Well, the launch constraints are observed. So the latest I can call the flight through precip constraint would be 5 minutes, T-minus 5 minutes, and I make a forecast for T0. When it comes to the lightning launch criteria, we can call those down to T-minus 10 seconds. So that's the latest we call those. Now there is RTLS, I forget the exact time, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 minutes after launch. And so Spaceflight Meteorology Group is making a forecast for RTLS all the way up to that, you know, for that time period. So that is a forecast for RTLS. It's not an observed condition. And so that's sort of the window, if you will, of when the weather has to be good. And so what could help us have that? Well, if you happen to have a time period where you don't have a lot of showers and you have enough cloud cover to hold off that sea breeze, then you could get an opportunity to launch.
Jackie.
Thank you. Jackie Goddard for the Times of London. Question for Kathy. There's a lot of people going to be outside waiting for this, hoping it's going to be this great, as Mike Lineback said, bucket list experience for them. Even if the shuttle does go tomorrow or over the weekend, what kind of launch experience are those people going to get? Is the visibility still going to be poor?
Well, certainly we're thinking we're going to have some cloud cover, particularly the price at around 8,000 feet is right now what we're calling for the ceiling. So there'll be a low deck around 3,000 feet and probably a mid-deck, what we call mid-deck, right around probably 8,000 feet. So if they're on the coast here, they'll see it up to that point, and then it'll just be on if we get some luck and get some breaks in the cloud. Obviously, if we're launching, we're green enough, you know, we're green on the constraints, so possibly we've had a break, but we do expect either way that we're going to have some cloud cover in the area.
Okay, we have time for one last question. Gentlemen, right here in the middle in the third row, please.
Hi, I'm Alan Boyle with MSNBC. I wanted to ask about the cost per day of a scrub, and also how many days would have to be set aside for that launch that kind of dictates what the break is going to be between launch opportunities.
The cost per scrub, I know we have some numbers that we probably can provide to you that the agency generally would go ahead and have determined what those numbers might be. But what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
The interval you'd have to wait for that other launch.
Well, generally we have either 24 or 48 hour capability, and the thing that splits that, it would be whether we, you know, go really late, i.e. after L minus 4 in that first attempt. If we scrub after that, then generally we're going to go to a 48-hour scrub, meaning if we don't try Friday, we would try Sunday if we go past that L minus 4. If we scrub early and we don't have any technical issues, because again, if you scrub, generally it's because there's a problem. I mean, that's generally the reason you're going to scrub early. And if you can get it fixed and taken care of, then maybe you still have a 24-hour capability if it was early enough.
Okay.
But after Sunday, there's the Delta launch?
There's a Delta launch that has the range tied up from the 11th through the 15th. We're still talking to them to maybe potentially get the 11th from them, which would move that block of time one day over, meaning we would come back on the backside of that if we